Merikara lay in the swaying, jolting litter, on cushions and a mattress stuffed with swan's down. Misha was curled at her feet like a sleeping puppy, but Merikara was awake and alert. The curtains of the litter were drawn back to let in the cool night air, and she could hear the sounds of the army on the march, the clatter of hoofs, the creak and rattle of the wagons, the lowing of the draft oxen, the cries of the wagoners and the tramp of the guards alongside the litter. Suddenly there was a commotion ahead. The swish and crack of whips, the crash of wheels over rocks, the sound of running water, and the splashing of animals and vehicles. Then Merikara heard her sister's querulous voice.
"Ho there, what's happening?"
"Your Majesty, we're fording a small stream. I must beg you to dismount, lest the litter capsize. The safety of your divine person is all our concern." She heard Heseret complain bitterly about the inconvenience, and Merikara took advantage of the diversion to whisper her final instructions to Misha. Then they climbed down from the litter. Slaves waited with lanterns to lead them down to the riverbank, where Heseret was already waiting.
"They woke me while I was sleeping," she told Merikara. "I shall report that oaf of a caravan master to my husband, the Pharaoh of Upper Egypt." "I'm sure it will be beneficial to your health to have the skin flogged from his back,"
Merikara agreed with sweet irony. Heseret tossed her head and turned away. At that moment a nightingale called upstream from where they stood, and Merikara thrilled to the sound. As children, Nefer had tried to teach her how to imitate that low, warbling note, but she'd never mastered it. 3 times the bird called, but only she took notice of it. The others were engrossed in getting the ungainly litters and the heavy treasure carts across the treacherous riverbed. The thousands of vehicles ahead of them had cut up the entrance to the ford and churned the bottom to a morass. It was after midnight before the crossing was accomplished, and the last treasure cart was dragged through, with loud exhortations to the oxen to heave away, and the flourish and cracking of whips up the far bank. Then the caravan master brought up sedan chairs for the royal wives. They were helped into the seats and carried over by teams of slaves. When they reached the far bank, there was further consternation and confusion, for one of the treasure carts had lost a wheel and was blocking the road ahead. Now, in addition to this mishap, the slaves who had carried Heseret across in the sedan chair had allowed the water to flow over her feet and ruined her sandals. Heseret insisted that they were punished on the spot, and the slash of the overseer's whips and the howls of the miscreants added to the uproar. Over it all, Merikara heard the nightingale call again, this time close at hand and on the same side of the stream.
"Do not fail me," she said to Misha. "My life is yours, mistress," the girl replied, and Merikara kissed her. "You have proved that very often, and I shall never forget it."
She turned from Misha and walked calmly into the darkness. Only Heseret paid her the least attention.
"Where are you going, Merikara?" "To drown the bad fairies."
Merikara used their childhood euphemism. Heseret shrugged, climbed back into her own litter, and drew the curtains. As soon as she was hidden from the road, Merikara stopped and gave her own inept version of the bird call. Almost at once, a firm hand closed on her upper arm, and her brother whispered in her ear,
"Pray desist, little one, or you'll terrify every nightingale from here to Beersheba."
She spun round, threw her arms round his neck, and hugged him with all her strength, too overcome to speak. Gently he loosened her grip, then took her hand and led her along the dark river bank. He went swiftly, and he seemed to have the night eyes of a leopard, for he never stumbled or hesitated. He did not speak, except to whisper a warning where there was a hole or an obstacle in the path. She followed him blindly. After what seemed half the night, he stopped to allow her to rest.
"Does Misha know what to do?"
he asked.
She'll keep the curtains of the litter closed and tell anyone who asks that I'm sleeping and will not be disturbed. No one will know that I'm gone.
Until they halt tomorrow, he qualified.
We've only that much time to get away. Are you ready to go on? We must cross back over the river here.
He picked her up easily and carried her across, and she was amazed at how strong he'd grown. She was a doll in his arms. He set her down again on the opposite bank, and they went on. After a while, she tugged at his hand.
What's that awful smell?
She gagged.
It's you, he told her, or at least one that shall take your place.
Before he finished speaking, two dark figures stepped out into the starlight on the path ahead of them, and Merikara gave a small gasp of fright.
"'Tis only Taita and Merin,'
Nefer reassured her.
They led her into a coppice, in which they were screened by the dense growth of leafy branches, and Merin opened the shutter of the lantern he carried.
Merikara gasped again, as, by the feeble yellow light, she saw the gruesome object stretched on the ground. It was a corpse, but so dreadfully mutilated that it was difficult to tell that it was human and female.
"'Quickly now,' Nefer told her. "'Give me all your jewellery and your clothing.'
Merikara stripped herself naked and handed everything to Nefer. Taita handed her a small bundle of spare clothing, tunic, skirt and sandals, to replace her own. Nefer knelt beside the corpse and placed the strings of necklaces around the dead girl's neck and the rings and bracelets on her skeletal fingers and wrists. He could not work Merikara's skirt and loincloth up over the rigid legs, so he ripped them to tatters and rubbed them in the dirt, then stabbed his own thumb with the point of his dagger and dribbled fresh blood on the fine cloth. From near at hand there came the shrieking, whooping chorus of a pack of hungry hyena. Merikara shuddered.
They've smelt the body.
They'll leave only enough evidence to convince Naja that you were devoured by wild animals. He stood up. Now, we must go. The chariots were waiting a little further upstream. Nefer had not wanted to leave their tracks too close to the body of the dead girl. As he pulled his sister up onto the footplate beside him, he looked into the east. The morning star, he said quietly.
It'll be light in an hour. We must make the most of the darkness that remains.
When the dawn bloomed, like a bouquet of roses and mimosa blossom, across the sky behind them, they were already halfway down the escarpment of the plateau, and the desert was spread out below them. It was such a grand sight that involuntarily they reined in the horses and stared out across the ocean of golden sands in awe. All except Merin. With the air of a pilgrim who has travelled across half the world to reach the shrine of the goddess he worshipped, he stared at Merikara as she stood beside her brother in the leading chariot. Through the long night ride she'd been hidden from him by the darkness, but now the early sun played upon her, and he stared. He had known her for most of his life as the saucy, impish little sister of his best friend, but this was the first time in 2 years that he'd laid eyes upon her. Time had wrought a miracle of change. Now every movement she made, every gesture and turn of her head, was perfect grace. Every angle and plane of her face, every curve and line of her slim body was exquisite. Her skin was cream and mother of pearl, her eyes greener and brighter than any emerald, her voice and laughter the most enchanting music he had ever heard. Taita caught his expression and smiled inwardly. Even in the most dire situations, life struggles to renew itself, he thought. But aloud he said, "Majesty, we must not linger here. The horses are in need of water." At the foot of the hills they left the highway and struck out in a southerly direction towards the great Bitter Lake. They kept going until they reached the first cache of water jars they'd left for their return journey, and found that Hilto had been there before them. From his tracks they could tell that his chariots, heavily laden with gold bullion, were moving only slowly, and that he was not far ahead.
They found with relief that he'd not used up all the water, but had left 4 jars untouched, enough to keep their horses going until they reached the next oasis at Zinalla. Although Merikara had been sparkling and animated when she chatted and jested with Nefer and Taita, by some chance she had not acknowledged Merin, or even glanced in his direction, except when she knew that it was safe to do so. Although once, not long ago, he'd treated her with lordly disdain, Merin was now too overcome to approach her directly. For she was a queen, albeit to a false pharaoh, and in his eyes at least, a goddess. For the 100th time since they had halted, he placed himself artlessly in a direct line of vision to her, as she rested in the scant shade of a flowering acacia tree. This time she lifted her eyes and inclined her head. He made a loyal obeisance. "Greetings, Your Majesty. I am delighted to see you safe. I was infernally worried for your safety." She gave him a single long look, searching and calculating, to take in his increased height and the confident, powerful set of his shoulders. She saw how long and thick his hair had grown, and not for the first time that day she was aware of a strange congestion in her breathing. "Merin Cambyses," she said sternly, "the last time I had any truck with you, you broke my favourite kite. Can I ever trust you again?" "With your very life," he said fervently. When the horses were rested and fed, and it was time to move on, Merikara told her rather casually, "Your horses have borne my extra weight all night. I think I should relieve them now."
"How'll you do that?" he said, puzzled.
"Ride in another chariot," she said,
and went to where Merin waited for her.
The following day they reached the oasis at Zinalla and found Hilto's squadron there before them. Now Nefer redistributed the weight of men and bullion equally between the 15 chariots, and they went on towards Galala at a better pace.